myself. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
So we have Donal Keoghan on the show today, lads. He's coming up in part two. He was at the announcement of the Allianz League sponsorship has been extended for another 5 years. That's going to bring Allianz up to 2025, which all on the face of it looks good. But when I read this, I was thinking, what the hell is supposed to happen to my championship restructure, which is bringing the league into the summer, which will no longer be the league then. It's going to be the championship. So this is supposed to happen. This is supposed to be voted on at an emergency congress later this year. So why are they doing a deal for another 5 years? Like, okay, so here's the thing that really annoys me. The CPA have pulled out of negotiations with this committee that was formed to restructure the championship. And they pulled out on the basis that they think that the GEA have no intentions of changing anything and that they want the status quo to stay as it is. So the optics of this are terrible, lads. Like, if the GEA, and like, I actually believe John Horan wants change. Why are they doing a deal with Allianz now instead of after next September, when we know exactly what we're dealing with for the next 5 years? Like, I mean, it's really annoying because before the broadcast deal was done for 5 years, and the following year they started the Super Eights. So there's a whole load more games. Then the broadcasters didn't want to put provincial matches on the television because they wanted the Super Eights games. And it was a whole mess. The hurling championship changed into a Munster and into a league. Loads more matches. And they had an old existing broadcast deal. Now they're getting 5 more years with Allianz as a league. When fingers crossed, I would love for the league to be no more the following year and it to be the actual championship.
Does it mean then that the league won't be called the league if it's moved to the summer?
It can't
and that
Allianz
have had any sponsorship of any competition that exists in the spring?
Well, Allianz will still have the hurling league, which is, you know, anyway. But I'd make an argument to say that the hurling league is obsolete because the hurling championship is a league, and the hurling league now is a terrible waste of time because all it is a secondary league before a really good league. Do you know what I mean? And I'm the only one giving out about that because hurling pundits generally don't complain about stuff. But like, I mean, they've obviously have provisions with Allianz based on what might happen. My thoughts on this, though, is, Gerard, why announce it now? Why not just wait to see what happens?
It's probably classic GEA, in my view.
That's Woody's, what I think.
Yeah, the cart before the horse. Allianz, if they're putting bread on the table, they're not the owner going into the dark. You can be sure that they probably know what's going on.
Yeah.
Or what's due to happen, or most likely to happen. And
see, what could happen? This is the thing. So I was trying to think what would happen. This is just with football, because hurling, right, as of now, they'll still sponsor the hurling league. Say if the football league is flipped and it becomes the championship, is the provision that they have to pay an awful lot more going forward? Because it's obviously the championship then, and it's worth an awful lot more money. Is the provision that the league sponsorship is, the contract is null and void after a year, which would be a really bizarre kind of thing to do? Is it a situation that if the provincials are moved early in the year and the championship is based on a league, that Allianz transfer over their sponsorship to the provincials part? You know what I mean? It's such a messy negotiation now, rather than what it would be in October when they know exactly what to talk about.
Well, Allianz definitely...
No, go on, no, go on.
I was just going to say that they definitely won't be cancelling the contract after a year, you know, having already agreed a provision for 5 years.
Yeah.
You'd like to think that provisions have been made, but as you said, you would have thought the provisions would have been made for the biggest changes in both football and hurling championships going back probably a generation.
Wait.
The broadcast deal seems the same. But the only thing I'd say is that the existing relationship between Allianz and the GAA goes back so long that you'd, you know, I think it's like 25 years, possibly even more, that you'd trust that there's parties there that, you know, because the relationship has gone on for so long, that they have provisions made for what will happen down the line. But
yeah, no, I'm sure they have provisions. I'm just thinking how many provisions do they need? I'm after listing off a few potential provisions there. And like, I mean, what kind of a negotiation is this? Because they have championship sponsors. Centre and Supervalue are there. And isn't it, I think Centre and Supervalue are there until 2022. So, like, I mean, that's a mess as well. You know, I suppose Allianz can't go across and just become championship sponsors all of a sudden because you have other championship sponsors under contract. And it's just, to me, it looks like a mess and they could have waited.
Of course it could have waited, but again, I'll just say this, not to repeat myself, it is classic GAA. They tend to just push things through. The different departments in there, the commercial department would have their strategy. and their vision, and they're obviously coming towards the end of our deal, and it is important to try and get a new one in place the guts of a year before the current one runs out. So I'd say that's just what they're thinking, and they're not overly bothered maybe with what the guys on the Central Council are going to do in terms of reorganising fixtures, that they're just rolling behind them. But if your Allianz, if they're sponsoring the Hurling League as it stands, and then they're coming to the summer, and then obviously the Football League's on the summer, well, they just get extended exposure in a way, I suppose.
Yeah, but look, we don't really know. We don't really know what it is. I do accept keeping a sponsor and having, geez, a year in advance is a little bit much for me. Like in September, you're still giving yourself 4 months, and like there is a good partnership there. I think the optics aren't good, and I think that the championship restructure of the league flipping into the championship can't be in their thoughts if they're too much. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Which it's my favourite. It's my favourite restructure because it's mine, and I'm a little bit I'm a little bit disappointed with it. And I did ask somebody in the GA yesterday for clarification about what happens, and he wouldn't give it to me. He was a bit annoyed about. I tweeted about this yesterday, and I said it looks like they're making it up as they go along. And he preferred to talk about the tweet than actual giving me clarification for the show today. So, like, I mean, I don't think that helps anything either. Like, you know, I said tweet is one thing, but I want to have a proper line for the actual show. Yeah. Said I get things wrong on Twitter all the time or whatever. And I got a lecture about Twitter use rather than give me a line, which that's disappointing as far as I'm concerned.
But it is like, I know, Merta in there, going back to the Lance Armstrong stories and the cyclist where there was a silence. You said nothing in terms of what you're seeing. But there's like the silence in Croke Park as well, and working in GA as well, it can become quite frustrating where you're asking these simple questions like you just asked yesterday. Yeah. Like, so what is the plan? What is the vision? And I don't think they know.
And that's what they're criticised a lot for, not having a long-term vision, seeing what's coming. What's the GA structure, sponsorship, broadcasting rights going to look like in 5 years' time? I'd say they wouldn't know. Like, I mean, which is crazy stuff. And you'd imagine that this restructure now is going to be a long-term restructure. So based on what's decided in September, let's start negotiating based off what we're going to see for 5 years rather than let's, you know, listening. She could talk about it all day. It is crazy stuff. Michael Murphy has been talking about that second yellow card. And, like, I mean, he said, I was trying to get up the field. Like, this is fairly obvious what happened. I was trying to get up the field and the two of us went down. And then all of a sudden, probably because of the length of time we're in the schmozzel, I appreciate the use of the word schmozzel, there's always going to be two yellow cards, but it is what it is. You're going to get that in football. Two teams going at it, two players going at it. It was frustrating and disappointing. We need to learn from it and move on. So, like, I mean, Michael Murphy's not going crazy about this. Michael Murphy would do the same thing if he was in John Small's position, as would any of the Donegal defenders do it. Nobody's necessarily blaming John Small for trying to stop Michael Murphy getting down to support an attack. The problem, don't hate the players, hate the game.
It's a fair point, and obviously I watched the match. I listened to your review show with Ciarán McKeever earlier on the week in Connell, and Michael Murphy's comments there. I think Michael was kind of diplomatic probably in his comments there. He's probably trying to deflect from it in ways, because he is still playing and he wants to concentrate on the football and going into next week's games. But I'm sure he's extremely frustrated with what's happened, and I know we've looked at the Clifford incident then as well. We've talked about that too. I think it's a cop out from the referees to send off the forward or the guy who wasn't instigating it. Now, if the guy who's being tackled swings out and throws a punch, well, then fair enough. I suppose you can't do that either. But if he's just been pulled to the ground, I think the referees or the sideline officials need to give more support.
In all their defence, these things often happen off the ball.
Yeah.
Where it's very hard to see the exact. Often when with the cameras, they'll pan on it when it's already flared up, like on Air Sport the other night. Nobody saw the start on any camera angle. So it is difficult to find that in it. I think if in doubt, don't give two yellows. Talk to them.
Yeah.
If there is no punches thrown, what's the big odds? You don't know what happened. You don't know how it started. Give them a warning. The game's nearly over.
Yeah.
Do you know? Yeah. Like, maybe the two yellows, no yellows at all is the solution here.
Yeah. Well, Michael Murphy to me sounded like a guy who just didn't want to be part of a headline this week.
But Michael Murphy knows the game, though,
course,
Connor.
Yeah.
See, that's, he can't cry about that when 100%. He'd be championing a defender for doing
that. Like Murphy moves on from yellow card controversy, doesn't sell headlines and doesn't sell papers. Michael Murphy knows that. But just the way he describes it is the way that it's being dealt with at the moment. That, like, you know, no matter how, if you're involved, you're going to get a yellow card. Like, you know, and that's the problem. That's the prevailing attitude, and that's the problem. But as you said, when you're not, when in doubt, why the need to actually give a yellow for something that it was, you know, I'd say it became clear fairly quickly that there was no punches thrown, bar a little bit of pushing and shoving, then listen, get over it. And then what that does is to detract for the need for the likes of John Small, who might have instigated the last day, or Ben McDonald. Well, if nobody's going to get a yellow, well then, you know, I don't need to instigate it in the present.
That's it, yeah. Pushing and shoving. And you always remember back to the All-Ireland final, Pat McEnany, the best referee probably had while I was playing, in 1996, where he sent off Liam McKay and Colin Coyle. If you remember.
Yeah.
His best thing there to do was to do nothing. Mm. There were so many lads. Like, you could literally send off seven or eight fellas.
Yeah.
Do nothing.
Yeah.
And they can still do the review afterwards.
You can do the review, suspend whoever you want. But when these schmozzles happen, it's just guesswork by a referee, isn't it, really? Yeah. Like, there's so many lads piling in.
David Coldrick, maybe the semi-final in the All-Ireland 2010 against Cork, which we lost. I should remember. Is it Pierce, the big lanky fella from
Pierce O'Neill?
I was doing to him what probably Smalley was doing to Michael Murphy the weekend, you know. And I got booked, and I says, "What about your man?" And he had a swing on me, and he says, "Well, I doubt he started it," is what he said, you know.
Which referee was that?
David Coldridge.
Very good.
And I said, "Yeah, I can appreciate that." And get on then, you know. But that's what the referee should probably do. But
yeah, it doesn't happen that often. You see, that was probably just a pull, and he swung back. Did you get him to the ground? If you got him to the ground, you see, that's when they both get the yellows.
When you
started into a wrestling
match,
you needed to bring him down.
Yeah. But I won that year. That's
exactly what it's. Yeah. But it is. It's definitely an interesting one, and I think enough of a light has been shone on it now, because we know, listen, it's been going on a long time where you're trying to catch up with the play and someone's trying to pull you back, and it's very difficult to know what to do. We see players the whole time now, which it's driving me up the wall, and Kieran Kilkenny's lethal for it. There's loads of players lethal for it, but his kind of examples stick out, where Ryan McHugh's trying to get up with the play and he's just turning around facing him and he's pushing him in the chest. But imagine how frustrating that must be. Yeah. Like, I'm sure you've done it, Gerard. I mean, because they've all done it.
Lee Keegan always good for that too.
Lee Keegan always does that with Connolly. Yeah, pushing him back.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd have the patience to be able to put up with that, because it's hard enough on your legs to be trying to catch up on the play. Never mind try and run, get it pushed, a good heavy push into your chest.
Yeah.
What's the forward to do in a situation like that?
Yeah, and again, that is part of the game. So
it shouldn't be, though. Linesmen should stop that.
Linesmen should stop that. And if Kieran or someone, again, everyone does it, is booked on the report of a linesman, well, then he has to be particularly careful, because second yellow and he's gone. In the forward's case, you just got to sidestep your man and get around him.
Yeah.
If there's a chance to catch him with something as you're going past, and no one sees, that's what I would probably do as well. And tough love, like, you
that's
know,
the thing. Yeah, that's the only thing is you literally have to stand up for yourself. Wasn't it very interesting what McKeever said about Michael Murphy, saying that we used to bully him? Wasn't it very honest for Kieran to admit that? Look, obviously bully players on the field, which is fair enough. We knew that was the case, and that goes on in most counties. But then Michael Murphy just took it, and I was listening to this, going, like, feeling a little bit embarrassed, because when anyone would be at me, I go, "Hey, ref."
But you know, you'd be slagging your mates wherever in school, and the fella that loses the head, you keep going at him.
Yeah.
But if he doesn't do anything, you're like, I'll go on to someone else, like, you know.
Jesus, a complete and utter baby. Imagine just how disrespectful they would have been thinking of me. What a baby this lad is, you know. But it was definitely crossing my mind as he was saying it. Tim O'Leary, lads, my thoughts on this is that good riddance to Tim O'Leary at this stage now, because, like, I mean, I was kind of half, he's done a great job on going from being this really generous benefactor and everybody liking, to thinking, would this lad ever go away now? That's kind of the way I feel about him now. He's preaching to the Mayo County Board, and we all know these are amateurs giving up their free time, and things are not run as well as potentially his company or, you know, professional football clubs, etc. Now, we all know that we're definitely on the side that they need to improve their standards. But, like, I mean, here he's going whoring out we're not very good, and a hashtag truth hurts. Who does this lad think he is? Like, I mean, okay, you have a few beers on board. Jesus, you're not an also-ran supporter. You're someone who's been dragging the Mayo County Board over the hot coals over money and demanding best practice. And this fella's been in Mayo dressing rooms, Connor.
Yeah, like I saw a lot of talk kind of on Monday morning. First of all, I was kind of glad there was a bit of news about Mayo that detracted from the performance in Monaghan. But there was a lot of talk about Mayo being the headlines again. It's been another embarrassing episode for Mayo. But like, I think for once in a long time, the county board are to be commended, because they took, like, this tweet was sent on Sunday evening. There was a statement issued by the Mayo County Board on Monday morning, very brief, very to the point, that we've ceased all dialogue with Tim O'Leary. Explained that, like, they met in January. They agreed upon a set of behaviours going forward that Tim O'Leary was happy with, that all the clubs in the county were happy with. It included conduct on social media, I think, something about exclusion of animosity. Tim O'Leary was obviously in breach of this with the tweet. Like, as you said, like, you know, fair enough, he's, you know, been a generous benefactor for Mayo, but it doesn't give him the right to be making ridiculous knee-jerk statements.
Absolutely not. It's not the Premier League.
No,
get out of it. He's not Abramovich, and he doesn't own Mayo GAA, and I think that's, in a way, might be where this lad's head's at.
Yeah, and like, it's not as if, like, to be fair to Tim O'Leary, at the very start of this process, he did raise issues with governance in Mayo that, like, to be honest, it was good that they were shining a light on.
Yeah.
But now that, like, that was in the past, and since then, as you said, people are getting a bit tiresome. There was a lot of tweets about, you know, he kind of revealed some confidential emails. He kind of was taking the piss out of the receipts and stuff like that, while, you know, it was a bit of a laugh for everyone for a while. But it was like, if you're in the Mayo County Board, this was beginning to get embarrassing. In the statement that they issued last month after they met with Tim O'Leary, they said that it's been a difficult few months, but we're happy to move forward. And I would imagine at that case, it was like, right, if there's any other instances again, we just cut ties with this guy. That's what happened.
Right, okay. And I completely agree. Does he bring players around in his helicopter and has been in the dressing room?
He has done, yeah. I don't know about being in dressing rooms, but there's definitely pictures of him kind of bringing some of the lads to events and stuff like that, yeah.
I've met him before. I met him at the Great Debate, where I took on Broly. Broly was hanging out with him. He was Broly's drinking buddy for the night. And they headed off then back to some pub down the road, drinking together. He's an English fellow, which I was surprised about. Like, he has a strong English accent. And I was thinking, Jesus, I wasn't expecting that. You know, I was thinking he's like an Irish-American kind of fella who just loves the GEA. But there's a piece in the Daily Mail of him. Did you see this?
Oh, I know about that one.
So
yeah.
It was in the Euro
2012.
Euro 2012. So there was an Italian penalty. Italy were taking on England in the Euro 2012. And Italy had a penalty. And this fella's up on the terrace behind the goals. So he pulled down his trousers, had the little fella shaking in the breeze, trying to put off the penalty taker. Like, this fella's obviously a loose cannon, and he's rich. He's rich. And suddenly everybody in the GAA world has known about this lad. What? Like, I mean, good luck, Tim. Now,
you know, might go on for a pint or not.
I wasn't blown away by him now, even that night. You know, like, I mean, I don't know. He's gone now anyway, so that's it. That's the last we'll hear. The other point of this is there's 250 grand up for grabs here. So this was money that hasn't been released to Mayo GAA that's been fundraised by his foundation. Now, the thing with Tim O'Leary, if he's in it for the right reasons, there's other people involved in that foundation, that money will still be released. Yeah. It's not about Tim O'Leary. I think Tim O'Leary wants it about Tim O'Leary. And it'd be interesting to see where that 250 grand gone. Mayo County Board, good luck, Tim O'Leary. Tim O'Leary, the question is now, are you in it for yourself or are you in it for Mayo GAA? If you're in it for Mayo GAA, that money gets released by somebody else, and thank you very much, with a couple of conditions, still conditions about how it's spent, whatever, that's all fine. But if Tim O'Leary takes his football and goes home with it, with the 250 grand, that'll really show what he's all about.
I'd like to think he wouldn't, but just I'm not sure does this relate to the 250 grand. You're on about our other monies related to the foundation, but he did say in the statement last month that a resolution has been reached and that the foundation money can now be released to Mayo GAA in accordance with an email sent last April. So I don't know, does that relate to the 250 grand?
I think
that
this is a new 250 grand.
Okay, well, as you said anyway, because I know that, again, I keep coming back to this statement last month, but they mentioned a trustee of the foundation, Terry Gallagher, and that he was kind of instrumental in bringing the two parties together, Tim O'Leary and Mayo GAA, to try and reach, you know, some sort of resolution because the dispute had been stretching back a long way. So there are other people in that foundation that, like, you know, will be hopefully acting in the best interest of Mayo GAA as well. And I would like to think that, you know, whatever about the tweet, that Tim O'Leary is still about wanting to, you know, be in this for the benefit of Mayo GAA as well.
Sometimes
so,
I think I don't know.
I know.
I wouldn't be so sure. Do you know how lucky Dublin are? They just take the money off AIG and have none of this shit. You don't even have to fundraise over in New York or anything. But wouldn't that be a nice one for you? It'd be a nice little earner for you, like the Kerry lads every year head over to a dinner dance and get a trip, and you know they fundraise that way. But you don't have to. You're millionaires.
I'd say there's a few mad dubs now on the hill pulling mooners and flashing ribbons. The medals are being taken.
You look up that article now.
So
finally, lads, Shane McGullion, I hope I've pronounced that right. He's in the Irish News this week and he's talking about Fermanagh's style of play. So he says we're trying to play with a quicker transition from defence to attack. A lot of us haven't played that way with Fermanagh over the last while, so mistakes are going to happen. That's just the reality. But the more we play it, the more we practice, these mistakes will get ironed out and hopefully we do the basics better. Armagh will probably be thinking we'll drop back like we usually did. But if we push out and put the pressure on them, hopefully we'll get turnovers higher up the pitch and get scores from it. So, like, I mean, isn't this just fantastic? Mm. This is on the back of Galway's breathtaking attacking display last Sunday. We have Fermanagh, who I said was the Black Death last year, turning around, pressing high up the field, moving the ball fast.
No, and
the game is turning though, lads, and it might be two more years before it's really, really, really exciting.
No, and it is great, and it's certainly entertaining to watch at inter-county level. The players, you're not worried about entertainment, and but you are worried about trying to enjoy playing football. Like, if you're just being told as a forward, and the way I suppose Galway were playing under Kevin Walsh and under Mickey Hart for large parts of his tenure in charge, where you're dropping guys back the whole time. Like, they have serious footballers, their own guys have serious footballers. We've all said it a few times last week, let the lads go and play football. And listen to Kieran McKeever, I agree with everything he said last week on the Monday show. If you're pushing up, putting the press in the opposition kick out, if the ball's coming down one wing, you're committing a few extra guys there, try to turn them over. Where the lads who aren't involved, you just took in a small bit to the side.
Yeah.
And if it's across the ball or whatever, at least you have a bit of cover. But it's not a case of everyone turning their back to the ball as it's being kicked out by the opposition and running back and taking up your spots, which is probably what Jim McGuinness had the guys doing
That's the difference, because you think back to 2011 and you were still kicking the ball in. I remember you doing it in probably too much in the first half, but you were like, you were completely sidelined by this, by the extremity of it.
Yeah.
But this is the thing, if a team like Donegal back then, Fermanagh, Carlow of recent years, turn around and run back ahead of the ball and go back and wait, there's no kicking game on there. Mm. There's none. And oftentimes, for a couple of years, teams are actually conceding kickouts just to be back there waiting. There is no kicking game then. It's impossible. Now that teams are all pressing, now there's a kicking game before they get back. You know what I mean? And the press and the kickout, like, that was obvious to me for the last 3 or 4 years, but it just takes so slow for these things to come around. And Galway will expedite that because they were on television and it's obvious that they were able to get the ball down the field faster than the Tyrone lads would filter back after their press. Yeah, and there you go. It's very obvious now.
It is obvious.
The kicking game works now better than the hand passing game almost.
Well, Mayo were the ones who kind of used that press for me a lot of the time against Dublin and forcing Clucks into one or two errors and try to turn the Dublin backs over.
Yeah, that was a big part of Horan's first tenure of management. Yeah. Was
that
massive
press? Yeah. Again, 17 final. I remember particularly when Jason Sherlock had to come onto the pitch to force Clucks to tell Cluckson to go short all the time because Mayo were having such a press on in the first half against Dublin.
And it does make for more entertainment football. It makes for again more enjoyment as a player. That you are getting engaged with your opponents very, very quickly. And again, it is high-risk football in ways. If you're the defence and you're getting turned over inside your own 45-yard line, all of a sudden the opposition, because they have committed a few fellas forward for the press, it's 6v6 as opposed to one forward versus six backs, which is what it kind of had been for a couple of years.
For a good few, we're coming out of that. Because let's be honest, lads, thank God. Because we all know, like, I mean, we analysed it on this show. We analysed it, but there used to be a nice clash of styles the odd time when a defensive team would meet an attacking team, and there would be a counter attack. And defensive football on the counter attack did look good. Mm. It was exciting, and the teams broke at pace. But two defensive teams against each other, some of those matches. They were desperate now. Honestly, you would be on the couch, and I know I'd have to analyse this the day after, I'd take off my phone and flick through Twitter, because I'd know there's going to be a minute of complete nonsense here, and then someone will take on the chance to break a line. It's like, oh Christ, lad. If Gaelic football kept going like that, lads, honestly, we'd Cheddar on the hurling show saying he used to love, just randomly, big GA man, big Gaelic football man, he says, I don't watch it anymore, it just doesn't interest me. Now he it'd probably start interesting him again, but it's, I think that's important too, the bigger picture of the game.
I wouldn't have said it on the show on Monday with Conan and Kieran here, but there was a couple of notorious old big games in Ulster that were like that, as you said. They were like, Jesus. And these are showcase games, showpiece games. They were like, Jesus, this is what the game has become when you have a defensive team against a defensive team. As opposed to a lot of games when those, you often say, and it's relevant to Gaelic football as well, as styles make fights, and those kind of different styles made for great games. But it's glad now, because I'll reserve judgment on Fermanagh till I see them. Like, it's got, like, whatever Shane McGullion's there saying, they're still the lowest scorers, I think, in Division 2. They're not like Galway, obviously, are on a different level to Fermanagh, but like the evidence in the change in Galway is dramatic. I mean, they're scoring 220 something, and like, you know, tearing the place apart against Tyrone. But like, I'll wait till I see against Fermanagh. But even if it didn't change Fermanagh, that style of play is now the exception rather than the rule. Whereas a few years ago, I think it was more becoming the rule than the exception.
Yeah, it looks outdated now, doesn't it? To be still doing that kind of thing. And it's funny that you're not fully believing Fermanagh, because Jim McCrory,
I have to see them.
Jim McCrory doesn't believe them either. He's obviously, I think he's the assistant manager in Armagh. He's McGeaney's right hand man. He says the theory is that they're playing a bit more attacking style of football and are now more open, but they'll probably go back to the usual 15 behind the ball, and that's hard to break down. So he's not buying it either.
I'm in the McCurry camp for now until I see Fermanagh, so we'll see.
McCurry, yeah, that's it. Like, I mean, look, the way I look at it, and I think every team should have more than one way of playing, because if Laois are playing Dublin in Croke Park tomorrow, do I want them to play the same way as if they're playing feckin' Westmeath, who they can go at and take on? If you're playing Dublin, playing with a couple of sweepers out of nowhere, it's not wrong if you're an underdog. Like, I mean, we all understand that. The point out, like, the trend that was going was that every team was playing with two sweepers in every bloody game. Well, outside of Dublin, who never... Kerry played defensively for a little while under Fitzmaurice, but then realised it's not really us. You know, it is the exception rather than the norm.
And like, look, Connor says. And you are right. You need a couple of options kind of in your gameplay, whether you are kicking the ball forward, if it's a slow play, that you are able to, player in possession can make a decision to maybe come back and recycle and try the far side. I thought, going back to the Dublin Donegal game briefly the weekend, I think Donegal were so ingrained and maybe in some ways to keep possession and avoid contact the whole time, that when they actually got the ball in one-on-one positions in the Dublin full back line and inside our 30-40 metre line, they were still afraid to take fellas on, and they kept coming back recycling.
Tears my hair out. Honestly,
Galway aren't doing that, and Dublin, there was one year, I think it was 2015, I think, where we did an awful lot of that. I know we won the All-Ireland against Kerry that year, but there was real opportunities for the likes of Kieran Kilkenny and even Jack McCaffrey to take on. It was a one-on-one, like, these guys are well able to take these guys on and create the overlap, but it was nearly coached out of them in some ways to just protect the ball, keep possession.
The year after the Donegal semi-final.
Donegal are playing like that, and Donegal have better players in the same way that Galway have really good footballers, as Tyrone do. And I remember that 2011 semi-final against Donegal. Michael Murphy's back in his full back line, and some of the forwards that they had, they were just all dropping back. Now, I know we nearly got cut out, but we did get over the line. We figured it out by the end. Or Kev Mack figured it out by the end, getting a goal or that, but a couple of points. But these guys are talented individuals. They're talented footballers. Push them up and let them take on their men if it is a one-on-one, and show what they're all about. But I thought they looked really, really coached, Donegal. And when they got the few points lead, they probably cacked themselves a small bit.
Yeah, and, I'm going to ask Donal Keoghan about that, because that's a criticism I have of Meade, of actually giving a good ball into full forward line, having a one-on-one, and sending it back out to the 45 where you came from. I can't comprehend it. I just can't comprehend. So you haven't given the ball away, but you've put yourself in a situation where you probably won't get a score. What's the point of it?
If I robbed that for a second, Connor, sorry, you're after the game, the stats go out, and this is it, this is what you see. And Connor, he had 10 possessions and he kept the ball 10 times. Well done, Connor. He had 10 successful passes.
Isn't that so like
five 1v1s against your man, like score anything, like, so
and we often talk about that, the need for a qualitative analysis of these stats, like, do you know what I mean, what good is completing 10 passes if you didn't, you know, if it led to nothing in the end, you know what I mean, as opposed to you took on your man five times, you didn't beat him twice, but you got 3 points the other way.
Well, that's it. So you got 1-1 out of five balls, you lost three. What would you take? I'd take 1-1 any day. Like, without risk you won't get anything, and that's like that is a big thing. But that's it. I'm going to start putting a percentage on it, because Galway right now are probably kicking maybe 70%, hand passing 30. Like, they're moving that ball fast. Their first instinct is that we want to move it down and kick it and beat the retreating players. Donegal are still probably at, like, they're kicking more than what we remember them, but they're still probably about 70-30 the other way. They need to, I think you need to go 60-40 kicking, hand passing. Like, the hand passing doesn't work now. And it's all because of the press on the kickouts. They're all doing it. Why would you work the ball up the field slowly and meet a pack defence when you can move the ball up the field really fast and get one-on-ones? Take how basic that sounds, lads. Is that not logical?
Even Galway's hand passing is positive.
It's
very rarely lateral. You know, they might do a 15-yard hand pass where it's just a too short of a distance to kick, but it's straight line. It's straight line towards the opposition goal. So, like, you could, while it mightn't, you know, correspond to your percentages for kick pass and hand passing, it's still really positive, which is obviously Pádraig Joyce's philosophy. Whereas I agree with Ger and Donegal Dublin that, like, the loop that Donegal do a lot, and like Paddy McBrearty does a lot and does very well, but it was nearly prescribed that they were going to do it beforehand anyways, rather than adapting to the situation. So, like, you know, rather than somebody deciding whether it be McBrearty, I wouldn't say Michael Murphy, but like, rather than take this guy on, no, we've worked on this loop, so I'm going to do it anyway. Whereas there has to be, you know, adapting to the circumstances that, you know, happen during the game as well.
No, I completely agree. Kieran McKeever did make a good point on Monday, saying that sometimes teams do it just for a breather. I completely accept that. There are times in a game we're slowing it down, game management, all those things. Relax, lads, relax, and let's work a loop. We'll all get a breath. There's
that
time for that.
The signal for Dublin as well, like, you know,
you see Fenton doing stuff with his hands a lot, isn't it? It's maybe
calm it down for a little while, give everyone a breather, and then we work on a set piece.
And that makes sense. But that can be within the 30%.
You could still have
the 70% of kicking. So I'm going to put a percentage on every team that I watch on what their percentage of hand passing to attacking play is. Would that be a good one? Now, this is completely estimated out of
the woolly chicken.
Well, there's two. Galway, Tyrone were on the weekend. Dublin, Donegal. There's two decent games.
Donegal did 20%, 80%, I think, against Dublin. Did too much long phases of possession, and that was in the first half where they wouldn't really need the breathers as much. And I thought they got the easiest scores they got came off the kick passes. So I think that's something they need to work on, especially against Dublin, because against Dublin more than anyone else, Ger. That's what Dublin don't like. One-on-ones close to their goal. That's what no team likes it.
No, well, as a defender, do you want to be marking your man receiving the ball out in the 45-50 or marking him inside your own 20-metre line and he has the ball? Like what's more dangerous? And obviously when the ball is inside and it was kicked in fairly quickly, well, then you have to be on your toes as a defensive unit. But certainly any of the Dublin teams I played on, we were always looking to kick the ball up as quick as possible, but we were able to adapt and evolve if we're playing against a defensive team, and then we were able then on occasion then to let's have a breather here, let's just keep possession, let's kind of reset. The opposition may have got a couple of scores or got a goal in on us. Let's just kind of hold on to the ball, take this thing out of their purple patch.
A phase of possession would be no harm there. Listen, we don't usually do tactical talk in part one. I feel a bit weird doing it, but it's been done now anyways. We'll come back with Donal Keoghan.
Dearie, great to finally get to interview you.
Oh, really, yeah?
Why
is it great?
Why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. I haven't been asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me? I know we spoke about the defensive side of things. If you're coming in and you want to be, if you want to be the Woolly Parkinson and just play for myself, and an inter-county corner forward isn't just hatching inside either. Unfortunately for you, Woolly, it won't last forever. You can ask ex-players that. You can ask you know that yourself, Woolly.
Yeah, mine never started at all.
Yeah, well, that's neither here nor there.
So Meath played Galway this Sunday in a must-win game, and their captain Donal Keoghan joins us on the line now. Donal, how's it going?
Not bad now, Willie, yourself?
Not bad, not bad. I see you're being positive. You were saying that potentially 4 points might keep you up and 6 points will definitely do it.
Yeah, I think, I suppose, going into the league, six was the target. I think was kind of mostly most teams on six in the previous years have stayed up. Just the way it's gone with a couple of draws and it's been a tight affair. You know, maybe potentially four might keep you up, it might not. But I suppose, yeah, we're looking to gather a few points now from here on in. So it's starting with Galway now this weekend, as you said, in Navan. So it's an opportunity there for us to pick up points. But Galway, you know, obviously the team in form at the minute, they're really flying under Bork Joyce and stuff like that. So it'll be a tough test, but you know, we welcome this Navan and hope for the best.
They're all tough games in Division 1, Donal, and that's the thing. And what's probably the most frustrating thing for you is that you don't have your full team. Like, I mean, and you realistically, no, not disrespect, don't mean disrespectfully, Meath need their full team to be able to compete in Division 1. Not compete, suppose, maybe yeah, not compete, injury. Maybe not compete to win.
Yeah, I suppose, look, the injuries kind of were kind of few soft muscle injuries, soft tissue injuries, another couple of other ones there that are kind of a little bit more serious and can be niggling at lads, and they're taking the opportunity now, rightly or wrongly, you know, just to get themselves right, which is perfectly acceptable on their own part. So I suppose in terms of the injuries, we can't really do anything about them at the minute because they've just happened, and I suppose that's the nature of the league, with given the workload and given the number and the volume of games. You know, you're going to pick up injuries along. Every team picks up injuries throughout the league. So that was, it is kind of, it is what it is as such. So now, I suppose, instead of lamenting or kind of moaning over the loss of those lads, we just have to pick ourselves up and we have to keep going. And it, I suppose you could lament over it, or you could see it, other lads can see it as an opportunity. I think that's what lads have done. Like, in fairness to them, we've a great bunch of character. We've got a good character there in the squad. A really good lads that they've stepped up now, and they've, you know, number of key positions have been filled with lads that potentially wouldn't have had that opportunity without those unfortunate injuries to lads. So they put their hands up now for reckoning, and it's up to the lads when they come back to get the spot back. But in the minute, you know, we're very happy with the lads that have stepped up and have filled those gaps. They're really putting their name forward.
Yeah, and any of those injuries, like Newman, Haran, Shane Walsh, all these fellas, are these aren't, none of these are long term injuries, are they? They'll be back for come championship.
I think that's the plan, yeah. I don't know the ins and outs of them exactly. That would be up to the medical team. But I think the plan is that hopefully, potentially maybe even get a bit of time into them in the end of the league, depending on some of them, for a few of them. But yeah, hopefully come championship, it'd be great to have them back.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you something tactically, because the one game I saw you playing was against Donegal. And I saw a quote from you saying about Division 1. He said, if you get turned over in the final third or a shot drops short, it's instantly an opportunity for the other team to counter. I think that's where we were getting caught a lot. So we're working on that. We're working on our efficiency in front of goal, our shot taking, making sure you're taking the right shot or the right person is taking it. Are they lessons that you would have learned from the Super 8s potentially last year?
Yeah, 100%. I think even as far back as the league final, you know, against Donegal, these are Division 1 teams that you're playing. Super 8, three Division 1 teams that you played. And I suppose we were granted that kind of, you know, it was great to get those three Division 1 games in the Super 8 last year as kind of almost, you know, to learn lessons that we need to learn going forward. So it'll give us an opportunity, instead of maybe the first three games of the league this year, learn your lessons there. It gave us an opportunity in the Super 8 last year to learn those lessons. And I think we learned in those lessons that, like, often we're in the game with 50, 55 minutes to go, and just the last kind of 15 minutes or last quarter, I'd say, that we kind of fade out of the games. And I think we put that down to our poor efficiency in front of goal, either, you know, our wide or gotten the ball short. And ultimately, at that level, teams are that good that they can punch you off like scraps like that. So even at the weekend there, you know, we hit a shot for against Kerry. We took a shot and it dropped short into the keeper's hands, into Kerry keeper's hands. They came back up the field and scored a goal off it. So, you know, there are the fine margins that you're talking about. It's tough lessons to learn, but they're valuable at the same time. So it's something that we definitely learned from in Super 8, and even in our first four games, we're continually learning. And as a group of players, as a squad, I think the lads are good enough to take messages on board, and we're just constantly trying to build on each performance the week previous.
Right, because I know from watching the Donegal game, there was a few occasions in the first half where you give a good ball in and whoever has it in the full forward line and there's a potential one-on-one. And for whatever reason, they might kind of, you know, turn away from that one-on-one and pass it back. And then suddenly it's passed back and it's back out to where it was kicked from. Do you know what I mean? There's a tendency for teams maybe to overdo not wanting to give it away, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's possibly something that has cracked us, and we're trying to iron that out throughout the trainings in the previous couple of weeks. And I think then again in Kerry there, we kind of brought that to a new level where we've kind of just got a little bit of confidence back. I think maybe confidence was an issue at the start of the league, but, you know, there hasn't been a whole lot of game time in your first two games, so lads are still kind of finding their feet. No matter how much training you do, you still can't replicate kind of a game situation. So given that we've gotten four games now under our belt, I think, you know, lads are getting a bit more comfortable with themselves and taking the game on, taking the man on, doing the right thing and just trusting themselves a bit better. Like, lads, we have good footballers in need there, so they just need to trust them.
Well, that's the thing, because it's difficult enough to give a good football pass in to the full forward line and get a ball in space. The last thing you want is for maybe you, who's given the foot pass, to get it maybe 30 seconds later again.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing, and we're constantly working on trying to produce the finished article and trying to get that shot away in an area that is an advantage to us, to like not to get the ball in and bring it back out and try to have to do it all over again. So it's something that we're working on. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think that, you know, the way Galway obviously have brought the kicking game to the fore this year, and that's their style of play? That's Meath's traditional style of play, I suppose. Like, I mean, I'm sure your players are very natural at doing that. That's always been the way Meath played. You've changed a little bit more to a running team like everybody else, you know, for obvious reasons, the way the game had gone.
Yes, well, Galway are playing a really nice brand of football. They're mixing many different aspects of the game. They're playing a nice game of football. And it's, of course, as you said, maybe it's something that was kind of representative of football maybe back a couple of years ago before maybe the defensive side of things came in, but Galway kind of resurrected. And I think a lot of teams nowadays are kind of adapting that free-flowing approach. You see, like for Dublin, they're playing, again, a free-flowing game. Kerry's, the Mayos, they're all playing that free-flowing game, which has obviously been an advantage to them. I think Meath, we're trying to mix it. We're trying to use both or a number of different assets of the game, obviously the game run. We don't really tie ourselves down to one aspect or another. We just kind of, a lot of it is instinctive. It's decided by the man on the ball, what he does with it. So it's kind of, we're allowed that freedom by the manager to kind of express ourselves and do what we want kind of in terms of attacking. We don't really have a structure in place, like, so it's very much down to the man on the ball.
Very much down. I suppose we were talking on the show, we were laughing, Ger Brennan was talking about maybe players getting stats after the game and, you know, being given the stats, you gave the ball away three times and somebody else didn't give it away. And then we were saying, what about the fella who gave it away? What was he trying to do? And what was the other fella trying to do? You know what I mean? Sometimes the stats don't paint the picture of what, you know, an offensive player trying a difficult pass rather than somebody else playing it safe.
Yeah, you can look at full stats on the page are very different to the game in real time, like, you know, that way. So, as you said, a lad giving the ball away, well, his intentions were to get the game going or get the ball moving. I think, you know, it's important that you do marry the two. Obviously, stats are important in the modern game, but you also have to look at the real time picture and see what was going on at the time or what were the options even at the time. You know, sometimes a lad has no option and his only option is to potentially try a 50-50 ball or a non kind of, you know, not advantageous ball. So that's obviously going to come with some risk. So yeah, there is that aspect. But I thought is that you've feedback constructively with those data and you use that data to your advantage and not kind of put preventions on lads or don't prevent them doing something that they would naturally do just because they're worried about a stat at the end of the day. I think that can also hamper lads if they're too worried about the many balls they're giving away or many tackles, and then sometimes it becomes a bit of a burden on lads. So it's all about making sure lads are, that they have the confidence from the management to do and express themselves, which is really important, I think.
Yeah, no, exactly. Come here, you're around since 2012. Banty gave you your debut. Jeez, if people remember back to Banty over Meath, it seems like a long time ago right now. But it's been a fair roller coaster for you, hasn't it? Like, I mean, you've been relegated down to Division 3 in your time. You've had two All-Star nominations. You've had Leinster final appearances. Now you're now in Division 1. You've done the whole tour, Dole, in the time you've played for Meath.
Yeah, it's been a good mix of a few highs, a few lows, but I think that's all part and parcel of the game. I don't think I've enjoyed every year so far, and I'm continuously enjoying it as well. So long may it last, but yeah, I think that's part and parcel of the game. Like, it's obviously nothing's going to stay at one level forever. You go up some days, you go up down some days. So it's just about, I think personally, I just take it kind of match for match and week to week. So it's just about enjoying it and living it in the real time. So you don't know what's around the corner or what could come around and hamper your progression next. So it's all about enjoying it, I think. Living in the moment.
I'm sure you're enjoying it a lot more out in the halfback line than you were following fellas around as a cornerback.
As I said previously, like, a lot of my football underage would have been in the halfback line. I played a lot with Kenny in centre back and wing back, so it's probably an area that I was more probably comfortable than perhaps playing in the full back line. So you do get on a bit more ball out there, and you've a chance to express yourself a bit better. Yeah, so it's enjoyable. Yeah, very enjoyable. Well,
that's interesting. You say that you played a lot of underage at wing back, because I was reading that you didn't play with the minors. You were a sub on the Meath minors. Is that right? There's always examples of this, which I find very interesting.
Yes, like, when I say underage, I mean like my club, like underage or whatever. Okay. I didn't play much with Meath. I played nothing with Meath underage in terms of like under 14, 15, 16. It was only until minor I was brought in. A club of mine, Barney Allen, who's chairman, and Eddie Bellew kind of persuaded me to go in there, two club mates of mine. They said those trials on for Meath minor, so I wasn't going to go. And then
You didn't want to go? Is that it? You weren't pushed?
At the time, I wasn't. I suppose maybe. I don't know what it was. I just didn't think maybe it was up to that level or something. So I was kind of nearly, hesitant enough to go in, sort of thing. But they were, I suppose, they had the confidence in me to say to go in, make sure you go in and have a go. So I went in anyway and got on the panel then for the minors, but didn't play much, didn't see much action there. Yeah. We got knocked out early, so I suppose it wasn't a great run. But ever since then I've kind of, been knocking around, need set up under 21s as well.
Where did the big improvement in your game come then? The 2 years you played under 21 before 2000, you made your debut in 2012, or did 2012 just lift you into a different kind of place form wise?
I suppose I've been knocking around kind of panels and extended panels for a number of years, kind of before 2012, kind of from nearly 2010 on, which would be my 2 years in the under 21s. Eamon O'Brien, who was manager at the time of Meath, he won the Leinster final there with Meath. He actually set up a kind of like a provisional development squad. So he kind of picked young lads maybe coming through the ranks that would have been maybe shown potential. So from the minor panels and stuff like that. So even myself and Mickey Newman, Dunica Tobin, Mark Collins, a few of us there who would have been played senior football, we would have all been on that kind of group together. And he kind of was the one put in place then, like, early gym programs and a bit of conditioning work for us that we could use then going forward. And then if he was stuck for, say, numbers for an in-house game, he'd often give us a bit of time, which was nice to kind of drip feed into the exposure and the senior setup.
Yeah.
And then it was going from kind of, it was a gradual increase then into your load. So maybe you see nowadays sometimes lads come in from under 20s or under 19s and they're coming into senior panels and they're maybe just not used to the workload, and their bodies often break down the first couple of years until they get used to it. So I suppose Eamon, with the development and the hindsight the foresight that he had, he set up these development panels, and it was kind of a nice opportunity to creep the load up a little bit on us and get us a little bit conditioned in that vital stage of, when you're 19, 20, when you're developing a bit better and you can kind of withstand the higher loads. That he did it in a structured way that was not going to overbear you, but it was preparing you for potentially something that's going to come down the line with me. Like, so he was a good foresight there, and actually a lot of us in that development squad did progress onto the Meath team, so it was good. And then, as I said, he could tap into it if he was stuck for numbers in his game or something, which kind of gave you a little bit of a drip feed into the setup. So it was really good, actually.
Yeah, no, it definitely sounds good. So, like, I mean, I don't want to put a dampener on things, but you've lost 7 games in a row. And we often talk about this on the Hurling Show with counties that are trying to make the step up to the next level. Is the experience you've gained from those 7 losses, does that outweigh, is that better than the momentum you would gain from being in Division 2 and winning 7 games, for example?
Yeah, I'd be a big believer, and I suppose the whole setup and management are a big believer in that the lessons we learned in those 7 games it has to, like, it definitely has to stand to us in the long term. So, like, the example that Andy gave, like, you know, if you look at potentially the share price in a big company like Facebook or something, things up in a straight line, he always says. So there's always troughs and there's always dips and what's done in life and even like share prices and teams form or whatever. But I think the overarching trend in our kind of performances is that we're getting better. And as a result of those seven games, I know obviously, as you said, seven losses in a row, but I think there's definitely, we've learned so many lessons and we're definitely a better team now. As I said previously, this time last year, no one on the team had Division One experience at all. So now we have, you know, 26, 20, 28, whatever the number is, a lot of lads that have played Division One football and have experienced that level of speed and accuracy, the opposition. Like, so it's definitely going to stand to us. You need to try to get a few results. But as we said, if our performance keep improving, the results hopefully can look after themselves.
That's brilliant, Donal. Thanks very much for taking the call. I won't waste any more of your time. I'll let you back to work.
Cheers, buddy.
When your legs don't work like they used to before.
I was actually coming home on Saturday morning and I had the podcast on from Newbridge all night, and that helps the journey, to be honest, if I've ran out of Ed Sheeran songs. Depends on mood I'm in. Ed's good for if you're in a sappy mood, Ed's good to sing along to, and then if you're in a GA head mood, which I am probably most of the week, then I turn these boys on.
Darling, I will be loving you till we're 70.
So a little bit of analysis, lads, and I suppose the big one of the weekend, as far as I'm concerned, and I'm the important one because I produce the show, is Mayo and Kerry.
Not going to disagree with you there.
That's on Saturday night. This is on Air Sport and it's on RT2 as well. And, like, I mean, I don't know, we've talked about a lot of teams. We haven't really focused all that much on Mayo. James Horan said after the last game, he says, we're looking at winning games. We're looking at playing well and we haven't played well yet. And we want to try and get a good performance. This is, he's talking after the Monaghan game. And, you know, that's a Mayo were in that for a long part of the game. Like, even Stephen Cohen had the mark that he missed kind of tamely, to say the least. And, you know, they kind of fell apart after the red card. But, like, I mean, if the reality is Mayo are on 3 points and they're lucky to have the 3 points.
Yeah, completely. I mean, we're absolutely...
They could be on 0 points.
Yeah, we were blessed to get the last minute goal by James Durkin in Ballybuffet. And then against Meath, Meath probably should have won that game, especially after getting two goals.
It was a late McLaughlin goal.
Yeah, really, getting two goals against the Breeze in the second half. And even Kevin McLaughlin's goal came out of a mistake by the Meath corner back. Pounced on by McLaughlin, gave it to Ryan O'Donoghue, gave it back to him and got the goal, which was crucial at the time. So absolutely blessed to get those points. And, like, even though you say we were in it, and we were in it until, let's say, Jordan Flynn got sent off, I always had the nagging feeling throughout the game. The Monaghan were just getting scores easier. Monaghan were going to go on to win that game. I would have been very shocked if Mayo went on to win it. That's Mayo with 15, and then Pádraig O'Hara got sent off at the end. 9 points was a bit much, but I thought Monaghan were the better team. Just as a Mayo fan, like, obviously worried. Like, Mayo last year was a relief because we weren't in this situation, because we started the league so well. First year in a long time, the relegation wasn't a big threat. But, like, we're kind of used to this. But, like, I fear for Mayo more this year than I do for other years, because first of all, the players that we have coming back are a while away from coming back, I think, and these are crucial players to Mayo.
But I think Donal Vaughan and Killian O'Connor are close to coming
back. I think James Horan said about them that it's a matter of days, so whether they're going to be involved against Kerry, I haven't seen the team yet, I'm not sure. But even if they do come back, they're coming back in, you know, after Killian O'Connor, definitely, and Donal Vaughan as well, out for fairly long spells with injury, so whether they'll be able to adapt to that immediately, I don't know. And then, as well as that, then, it's like Mayo are nearly struggling for an identity. Identity crisis. We've young players coming through, but they're probably not at the level yet. The lads that are, the experienced lads that are coming back, they're not at full tilt yet. They're used to peaking for the championship. So, but it's come to a stage now where we need results. And you know, Kerry this weekend, I'm not sure. I think the big one for Mayo is going to be Tyrone in a couple of weeks' time, depending on how results go. But yeah, I think we've managed to dig it out when it didn't look like it in recent years. But I know this could be the year that I hope not, but that Mayo could go down. It's the first time in 25 years or something.
They're
like
the longest
that.
Serving Division 1 team, I think. They did it. They avoided relegation in 17 and 18. Kevin McLaughlin on both occasions. So he had a late point against Tyrone to beat them and stay up, and a late point against Donegal to draw and stay up. There was always a feeling in those years, though, Gerard, that you know, Mayo are timing their run. You know, they're maybe a team that has a few miles on the clock, and, you know, they're focusing on more the championship than the league. This time there's a feeling that they're trying out a lot of young lads. They don't seem to be up to that standard of the players that aren't there. And a bit like Meath, Mayo now don't have the squad to deal with players being out and be a top Division One team.
I suppose the bar that Mayo are kind of working towards, again, is trying to win an All-Ireland, because they've been so close over the last number of years. Winning the National League last year set up great hopes for them again. I think for me, Conor, I know you're as a Mayo guy, but some of the trusted lieutenants just haven't been able to cut it in the big games. And again, there's only fine margins between the squads. And maybe James Horan, he in his head with the management team, it's a case of I need to have a look at as many players as possible, give them as much game time as possible. And if that means going down this year, which I'm sure he's not, nobody wants to go down. But if that gives us better experience or exposure of these young players for the next 2 to 3 years, as opposed to going with the same guys who have gotten them so far, maybe that's what he's doing, and he's kind of happy to do that. But come the championship, I'm sure Horan's ego and more than our own egos, if you're involved with the team and the pressure comes on, he probably will go back to, I think, a lot of the same.
Oh, he has to. And like, I mean,
the guys they're doing all right, some of them, like, you know, but they're just not kind of cutting it, like, you know.
Yeah, but just on that, but we've mentioned before as well, it's different if you're a young lad coming into like an established team with maybe 13 players that you're kind of that they're used to playing for Mayo for years. It's different to trying to make an impression when you're coming into a team with that is 7 or 8 young fellas. And James Horan has been kind of forced into this because, as I said, these lads are not back from the more established lads are not back from injury yet. So while I'm sure he wanted to blood them anyway, he's been left with little choice because there's nobody else available, because these lads aren't ready to come back yet. So that's why, like, there's been flashes, there's been glimpses from the likes of Tommy Conroy, from Ryan O'Donoghue, but they're playing in a team that's struggling as well. So it's not necessarily doing them justice either.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
But that's the way it's going to have to be until these lads are going to come back. It's going to be these lads that James Horan is going to have to rely on to get these results. And I hope, but I have my doubts about whether they're going to be able to do that in the coming weeks.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, it is very easy to do maybe like a Pat Spillane on it and say Mayo are finished, and everybody, you could have a, like, there was people doing that in 17 and 18 or 16 and 17 when they ended up nearly beating Dublin because of the league. And like, Donal Vaughan's out, Killian O'Connor's out, Brennan Harrison's out, Seamus O'Shea's out, Chris Barris is out, Chris Barrett is out, Fionn McDonagh's out, Jason Doherty's out, Matthew Ruan's out. Like, what man is that? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's eight starters. Colin Boyle's long term, so he's out for the year. Like, I'm talking about lads that potentially could be back in the summer. That's eight. That's 8 out of 14 outfield players. All them are guaranteed starters. You'd say Fionn McDonagh maybe, but you'd imagine after last year he'll start wing forward. They're nowhere near full strength.
Yeah, and Horan, I'm sure, isn't worried, and maybe it is, given the injuries that are there, that it's less pressure then, or he feels less pressure with some of the results, because anybody who knows Mayo football will know that, well, we have these 8 guys, and obviously Colin Boyle, long-term injury, out of action, so we won't worry about it just yet. And if we get these lads back towards the end of the National League, and certainly by the first round of the Connacht Championship, that we'll be in the mix again. And so maybe that's what Horan's thinking too. The great thing about Mayo, Willie, and the example he gave there, is that those lads love playing Championship football, and we've all talked out for a league game, and we've all talked out for a championship game, whether it's club or county, and there's always a different buzz coming to that game, and there's a bit more adrenaline going, and you do get yourself up for it. And those that Mayo team, the players you mentioned, have a huge experience at performing and certainly getting to the latter stage of championship. So hope isn't all lost, but for me, I think some of those guys are they going to start? Yeah, but have they all been able to cut the mustard in the latter stages of the All-Ireland Finals, which very, very close in terms of winning and losing, the fine margins. I know it's been draws and there's been 1-point losses, and I just think of Donal Vaughan when he went in but he gave John Small a push and stuff like that. And
I should have a list of hard luck stories. You
know, a list of hard luck stories. But the point is, I'm making is that these guys have done extremely great work and given an awful lot of great service, and I'm sure they'll continue to do what they can.
It's interesting that you say that. What a fellow on Twitter said this to me today. He said that Dublin's slow starts are probably due to the fact that their last big game in Croke Park was the All-Ireland final, and now they're playing games in Croke Park with 20,000 in it. Like, it must be a terrible come down from them to come from last year's championship five in a row to now a ground where they can hear each other shouting, and you know there's no buzz around the game. Obviously they did a good start against Kerry in the first one because it was a repeat of that All-Ireland, you know, and now you've had three bad starts in a row. Would there be anything of that to that in it? What is it weird for you having normally would have been packed usually when you played there, and then again I suppose your league games got better crowds as well, but there obviously would have been some league games where it would be weird that you could actually hear yourself talking.
Was it as well 2010 where Joe Sheridan got the try to beat Louth in the Leinster final? me put five goals on us in the semi-final, and
I was on the hill that day trying to stop smiling.
You were pulling any moonies or anything.
I thought that was you, small fella. But we went through the back door and we played Armagh and won the back qualifiers.
Tip as well, no?
And played Tip. And the Tip game, I think there was like 18,000 or something came up on the screen, and that was a weird experience. But again, because it's such a huge mecca that it can become quite eerie. But I don't know. It's a fair point, probably, Wally. But I don't know. It probably gets in on the guys too much. I think they've just been starting the league poorly, bar the Kerry game that you mentioned.
Right.
You
know? Okay. Maybe fair enough. So we talked about Lee Keegan. What's your thoughts on Lee Keegan, Connor? Is this just a matter of, like, Chris Barrett comes back, plays cornerback? Although Lee Keegan did mark Conor Callaghan. My thoughts on it, what happened, Lee Keegan, that suddenly he's been turned in from being the best wing attacking wing back in the country with Jack McCaffrey, a player of the year. Then Rochford started using him to mark Enda Smith, which made sense in midfield. Then suddenly he's back in marking Quinlivan at fullback. Now he's an orthodox cornerback. This is one of Mayo's greatest weapons, best players ever. And now he's a cornerback. I'd say opposition teams just cannot believe this. I was thinking when Chris Barrett comes back, grand, he'll go up back wing back. Or maybe he was struggling for form at wing back. Let him play himself back into form. Like, it's Lee Keegan. He's going to come back into form.
I'd like to think that'll happen eventually. I mean, when I saw him named cornerback at the weekend, I thought it was a plan to going on what he's done with mixed success in recent years, if you definitely go back to the Conor Callaghan situation last year. But I thought he was there to mark Conor McManus, which I wouldn't necessarily have recommended myself, but that's why I was maybe able to accept the logic. He wasn't even doing that.
But he's not a good man marker.
I agree. Like, I'd have Lee Keegan number five all day. I think just that's his best position. And the most annoying thing for me about the Monaghan game was that something I hadn't seen from Lee Keegan in a while. And this goes back to, because probably the last time he would have done it would have been last summer. But he was actually making those typical kind of Lee Keegan runs. But he was making them from so deep that by the time he got to, he was kind of reaching his peak around halfway instead of getting on, you know, maybe around the 65 and being able to kick a point at the 45-yard line. So, like, it was a waste of his kind of his strengths there. So, like, I like to think that, like, come the summer when Chris Barrett is back, my thinking as well is that Brendan Harrison wasn't playing against Monaghan either. So James Horn is looking at a full back line with Oisin Mullen, who's new. Pádraig O'Hara has only really started this year as well, that he needed some experience back there as well. That's why he put Lee Keegan back.
So you're
there.
Looking at Harrison, you're looking at Mullen, you're looking at Chris Barrett as your first choice full back line.
Given Oisin Mullen's performances, I know it's only the league, but he's been very impressive.
And then you're looking at Lee Keegan, you're looking at Durkin on the other side, and you're looking at a choice of centre half.
Six is a big issue for me at the moment, because I don't think that Lee Keegan or Paddy Durkin are natural centre backs, and I think you want them at five and seven. Michael Plunkett, I'm not sure yet. I mean, he started against Roscommon last year in the championship. It didn't go well for him. He didn't really play six after that. He's been the number six for the league so far. Probably hasn't done enough to convince. So, and with Cullen Boyle now out for probably the season, I don't know, is he going to persist with him there? Maybe Cohen is an option
at six. Is he?
Cohen has been named in midfield, but he's been, I think, because Jermot O'Connor then has been dropping back. And then you see the thing is, my thing as well is that Mayo don't have enough physicality in attack at the moment. So ideally you'd have Aidan O'Shea up there, but Mayo at the moment can't afford not to have Aidan O'Shea in midfield.
Yeah.
So
when Ruan comes back, for me, Aidan O'Shea he has to play up front for Mayo. Yeah, he just has to.
I think so too.
How far away is Ruan away?
James Horan actually did an interview with the Mayo News podcast this week, and he said that Matthew Ronan's only a couple of weeks away. Could play by the end of the league. He took a big knock in the Sigurdsson, he was playing for NUIG.
Right.
And Ruan gives just that a level of athleticism as well. Like, he was really impressive last year in Championship as well as league. So ideally, when Matthew Ruan comes back, he's a partner in midfield. Aidan O'Shea goes back to centre forward, I would imagine, and Stephen Cohen comes in at six. But that's hypothetically that everybody is fit to play there. But that's not going to be the situation for a few weeks. You're still going to have Aidan O'Shea midfield, probably with Dermot O'Connor. And Lee Keegan could, although I agree with you that I don't want him there, could end up playing in the full-back line because the lads aren't ready to come back yet.
It's a totally different sport playing in the full-back line and the half-back line. It's like two different games.
Yeah.
And the few times I got thrown in there, it's rotten, like, if you're not built for it.
Yeah.
The full-backs, like, they're different fellas. Like, they're just muckers and just get a hand on and...
One thing that I read Rio Ferdinand's book. Well, I read a passage out of it anyways, and he played centre forward as a young fella right up through the underage ranks, and then he went back at centre back, and he said at the start he hated it, he couldn't understand it, and it took about 3 or 4 seasons for him to actually start priding himself on a clean sheet and for his psychology to go from being the hero what he used to. We all kind of want to play football and get on, maybe as an attacking halfback, get up, get a score, influence the game. Yeah. When you're a cornerback, you have a whole other set of priorities, and they're not influencing the game.
Yeah.
They're just focused on one person. It's like a totally different ballgame mentally. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's like, what did they dream about the night before the game? It's just literally this fella.
Yeah.
Whereas in the other positions in the field, you're dreaming about being all over the place and getting involved and... The psychology of a cornerback is basic enough. Stop your...
Ono Donoghue had a great line, you referenced it here a couple of times, about making corner forwards life's misery or something like that. And that has to be the mentality of a lot of cornerbacks. You will have, like the way the Galway are playing at the moment, you'll have a Johnny Heaney that, you know, can get on the end of a move and get a goal or whatever. But there has to be, you have to have lads in your team that are prepared to have that mentality. I'm the same, like I've... flitter between cornerback and the halfback line. I hate the fullback line. It's completely different, and I don't understand the mentality of people who enjoy it. But there are people out there who do.
Yeah, to be converted back there is very difficult.
Yeah,
cornerback. Like Johnny Cooper is a big one that stands to mind. Like being a kind of a footballing halfback, turning himself. Now, well, I suppose he just took off up the field, maybe to break not to be completely cold turkey cornerback.
As also the way a team set up against Dublin, where they're conceding the whole time. So.
Yeah, so you'll get up the field at some stage.
I think I said a couple of weeks ago, but Johnny got injured in the warm up against Tyrone, the National League, maybe 2013 or 14, and I got put in full back on Stephen O'Neill. I think it was 2013. Tyrone were playing to the hill, and I was really really tight on him, like, you know, I thought I was, and he got 4 balls and he got 4 points on about half a yard. And I was like, this is rotten. But it's runs where when you're out the field, you're always kind of getting a push on the guy, you're getting a push on him. And the runs, they're not kind of 5 yard little darts kind of behind you. They're a bit longer, 20, 30 yards. So you can kind of read them a bit better and get yourself between the man and the ball. Whereas in full back line, it's the 5-10 yard hand pass, and you manage to sprint into a couple of yards. It's trying to kind of read that is
that's a hard one. And as well, we've said this on the show a good few times. If you're a half back and you're close to your man, they won't give him the ball.
Yeah.
If you're in the full back line and you're close to the man, he's getting it. You know what I mean? He's getting it. Yeah. So often a turn off for a half forward is just having his man near him.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to, that's a bit risky out here or whatever. But the full forward, for some reason, even if he's half a yard, he's getting it anyways. That's just kind of the tradition. Right, the other games, lads, we'll have to wrap it up here. Big one in Division 2 is Laois and Kildare. Laois could put Kildare in terrible trouble. That's in Amore Park at 7 o'clock. Big local derby in that one. We know Kildare in an awful run. It would be, lads, you know the old saying, too good to go down. Mm. Although Kieran McKeever doesn't have too much good... You don't have too much good things to say about Kildare either. I kind of believe in Kildare a little bit, maybe a little bit too much, based on you and Kieran McKeever's analysis of them.
Well, lovely footballers. They're well able to kick past the ball. If it was a skills session or something like that, or skills competition, you know, to be right up there. Yeah. But when it comes
you don't mean that as a compliment, you mean that as an insult, right?
Yeah, but fair enough. I do but their individual abilities does not transfer to the team for whatever reasons, and I just don't know. I'm not, I was a phone call there, I went to college of Maynooth. You did a few years in Maynooth, did you?
I did. Three years in Maynooth.
So you get to know a few lads, lovely fellas, but there's something that happens. Maybe it's the group mentality that maybe they think they're better than what they are. I'm unsure.
They need maybe a Kieran McKeever, or not a Kieran McKeever, Kieran McGeaney style older fella, real leader to whip them all into shape or something, that they might be afraid of or something.
Yeah, and I've heard Jack O'Connor's brought a couple of guys back in again, fellas who kind of drifted, but they're still not kind of cutting the mustard. And I think we all predicted, if I'm wrong, Conor Kildare to beat Roscommon.
Yeah, and I predicted him to go up as well.
Yeah, me too.
And I predicted Mayo to get to the league final.
Did you?
Very brutal.
Well, I'll replay.
Why are we on the show?
I'll replay all those predictions when the league's over, lads. Offaly Down is a big one in Division 3, as far as I'm concerned. They're both on 5 points. Longford play Tipperary, which is a pretty big one in that as well. Listen, that's all we've time for. We'll be back. We might do something on Division 3 teams next Thursday. We'll talk to you next Monday, where we'll review everything. We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.